in our class was Jesus sending out the 12, sending them out on this mission, and you know all the things that he had told them to do there, what they were to take with them, what they weren't to take with them, all of that. And then when you get down to verse 12, that it says they went out and proclaimed. We have that question, what is said of the success of the apostles? I know we were talking about that, about, you know, didn't matter how many people listened, and you know, it didn't matter as far as that goes, and the same thing is for us today. We so often get caught up in numbers, and we want all of these folks converted, and of course we do, but at the end of the day, our job is go. Proclaim the gospel to all nations. So as long as we're going out there, as long as we are scattering the seed, then we are doing our job. Whether or not their hearts are open to it, whether or not they will accept it, that's on them. So if we go and do the task that's set before us, then we're successful in that. So that's the last thing I remember us talking about. That's what I have in our notes. Did we get into this next section on, you know, the withdrawal and feeding the 5,000? Okay, I didn't think so. So as we're looking at this here, when we get to in Mark's account, you want to skip over verses 14 through 29. We'll get back to that a little bit later, and go down to verse 30, because it talks about after the apostles have been sent out two by two, now they've come back. So the apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. And of course, that's what they were sent out to do. He sent them out two by two, gave them authority. If you go back to verse 7, gave them authority over the unclean spirits. And he said, you know, they should proclaim everywhere that people should repent. They cast out demons, anointed with oil, many who were sick, and healed them. That was their mission. That's what they were busy with. So they come back to Jesus. They tell him all of that. And that's what they tell. It doesn't give us much to go on here in Mark's account. Over in Luke chapter 9, Luke's account is a little bit more of the same. On their return, the apostles told him all that they had done. So it doesn't really go into much detail, but we know what they did, and so they come back and report to him. It's just, I suppose you can chalk it up to the scriptures to waste time and repeating itself. We know what they were sent to do, we know what they did, and so when they come back and tell Jesus, they just tell him what they did. So that's what's going on here. Now, after they've come back, and quick question here, how long were they gone? Does it say? No, it doesn't give us a time frame here. Back in verses 7 through 13, we see where he calls the 12 and says, began to send them out two by two. And then later on down here, we see that they came back. And all it says is they went out, you know, from village to village or house to house or whatever. No time frame on it. But what can we say about this mission of them being sent out? Even if we don't know the exact length of time. They went, it was short, it wasn't, you know, that he, you know, go, not like our mission, you know, the Great Commission, go into all the world, that's all the time, we never stop, not until we're off this earth, you know. So it wasn't that, and it had to be a short period of time, because remember one of the things that he told them, as he's sending them out, he told them to take what? Yeah, don't take anything. No bread, no bag, no money in your belts. Don't even put on two tunics. Now, we can see where he says, when they enter a house, stay there until you depart from there. So the idea is when they go to this place and they proclaim to these people, if the people are receptive, then those people would show hospitality to them and accommodate them. But even that only goes so far. So the indicator is this was, you know, just for a day or two, or, you know, it wasn't very long, because they literally had nothing on, you know, take nothing except a staff. wear sandals, not put on two tunics. So he wasn't expecting them to come back in a month, or, you know, this was not going to be a prolonged length of time. It was fairly short, but they did what they set out to do. So they go, they take the staff, they take nothing else. Now, after they return, they report to Jesus what they had done. We get down to verse 31. What advice did Jesus give following this? Yeah. So even though they hadn't been gone long, they, in the time they were gone, they were busy. They were proclaiming, they were casting out these unclean spirits. They were doing what he had told them to do. And so there in verse 31, he says, come away by yourselves. To where? A desert place, a desolate place, which doesn't sound good. We think of a desert, it's not really somewhere you want to spend much time. But what it means is, you know, it's not a populated place. So it's not a city, it's not a town. You know, get away from all the people. You look over in Matthew chapter 14, you know, we see it says the same thing, a desert place, a desolate place. So this is, you know, what they're doing there. There is one other thing mentioned over in Matthew's account. We have this question: for what other reason did Jesus have for leaving Herod's territory? Yeah, Herod had killed John the Baptist, had him beheaded, and that's, you know, what we skip over there in Mark chapter 6 is the account of what all that was and how it went down. But, you know, so there was another reason for wanting to go, but beyond just the idea of getting away from Herod, why would Jesus do this, and why would he advise his apostles to do this? Go away to this desert place, away from people.
They didn't want to have trouble because they had a mission to do, and that may have been part of it. You know, Herod might have did something to interfere.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of right in his statement. He's come away by yourselves to this desert place, this desolate place, and what?
Rest.
Yeah, they've been working. You need to take a break. And he doesn't give a time frame on this, just like we don't see a definite time frame on their mission. But, you know, you've been busy with this, you've been working, now it's time to rest. So we see God acknowledging that, and I can't help but think of, you know, him establishing the Sabbath. Why would he do that? Because he understands just as much as work is important, rest is important as well. And Jesus is saying that here, come away by yourselves. You know, you've been in the villages, you've been with all these people casting out the spirits. Sometimes it's great to be around people. Sometimes it's great to be away from people. And that's the thought here. So we go to this desolate place, and we see that they get in a boat. They cross over the lake. They cross over the sea to get to this place. But they're going to this place with the thought of getting away from people. But what do they find when they get to the other shore? There's a crowd. Yeah, and this is one of the most remarkable things. We always hear about Jesus, you know, in his earthly ministry. He's going around, he's got multitudes, he's got crowds following him. And the idea that they would follow him through a city, through a town where those people live is okay. We can understand that. And even the notion that they would go, you know, from town to town, because a lot of these towns maybe were neighboring, you didn't have to go very far. But what it says here in verses 33 and 34, many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. So these people didn't, you know, call out to the apostles and, hey, wait for the, as far as we can see, there's no communication from Jesus and his apostles and then the crowds, the multitudes of people. But they see them, they recognize them, they know who they are, and they can see the general direction of where they're heading. But they don't ask them, hey, you know, where can we stop and wait for you? They don't even know that. They just have the, you know, idea. They're going over there. And they go on foot. And it says, from all the towns. So, you know, it seems to indicate to me there were some folks who saw them going, and they start, and then on the way, they're passing through these other towns, and they're telling them, and then more folks, you know, joined up with them on the way. So you have this crowd going on foot and get there ahead of them. Is that surprising that they would get there ahead of them? It is to me. I mean, we know they're in the boat, so maybe they're taking their time. You know, it's a nice, you know, relaxing ride on the water, boat ride. You don't have to get there by a certain time. After all, the goal to go there was to rest. So you're not necessarily going to be in a huge hurry. But still, you would imagine a small group of men on a boat could travel faster than a large crowd on foot. So that alone, but then you factor in, they're on the lake, they're on the sea, on this boat, seems to me like they're more or less making a straight line. Whereas these folks who are on foot would be going around. And yet they still manage to get there ahead of them, because of course, there it says in verse 33, they ran there. So it's, you know, it's showing this crowd of people who are so interested in seeing Jesus, in hearing him, in seeing what he can do. Now we know a lot of the time when crowds follow Jesus, it wasn't because they just thought he was such a great guy and a wonderful teacher, and they wanted to hear him, like it's students packing into a lecture hall to hear some famous professor. No, a lot of times people follow Jesus because they thought he could help them, because he was healing this person and casting an unclean spirit out here. You know, it was somewhat to an extent to see what they could get out of it, or to be there, you know, to watch him perform these miracles. So maybe, you know, their intentions weren't just, you know, to be around him for the sake of being around him, but because they thought it would be interesting to see. They wanted to be a part of this. But still, the fact that they ran there, not even knowing exactly where he's going, just to try to be near him, says a lot about these people, about their faith, about the zeal that they had. Because even some folks, you want to see this guy, you know, cast out this demon, you want to see him heal this person and make him walking, yeah, that'd be real nice. You mean I have to walk all the way over there? You know, even when it's something they want and they're interested in, you know, the extent to which they'd be bothered to go and see it varies a lot from person to person. But these people all ran and get there ahead of him. And of course, when Jesus gets there, this is great because not only does it say a lot about the crowd, about these people, but it says a lot about Jesus too. Why were they going over there again? To this desolate place? To rest. To get away from the crowds. Well, Jesus went ashore. He saw a great crowd. Did he tell him to go away? Did he snap at him? His plans are ruined. You know, you want a day for yourself. You want to just get away from the world. And then all these things get dropped in your lap. A lot of times we don't react all that well. But Jesus sees the crowds, and it says he had what?
Compassion
on them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. He had compassion on them. It wasn't lost on Jesus that these people, in order to get there before them, would have had to run. You know, they went to great lengths to be here. So even though he had wanted to have some alone time with his apostles and rest, he's not going to let these people go away empty-handed. He has compassion on them. He cares for them. He sees they need a shepherd. They need guidance. So he began to teach them many things. So that's what's going on there. And then we get down to verse 35, and he's been there a few hours. Again, it doesn't give us a time frame, but it says, when it grew late. So you're losing daylight. His disciples come to him there in verse 35 and say, what? Yeah, send the people away. Now, are they doing this because they're just fed up? That, you know, they wanted some alone time with their teacher, with their master? What's their purpose in saying this? Yeah, they're not being rude. They're not just, you know, get these folks out of here. They're bothering us. They were mindful of what these people would need. They've been here for, let's assume, a couple hours at least, listening to Jesus, but this is a desolate place. You know, there's nothing around here. They say there in verse 36, send them away into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. You know, they're going to need to eat something. And if it grew much later, they, you know, would need to find somewhere to stay, or at least, you know, some place to camp out. They need this. It's a legitimate need. But what's Jesus' answer there in verse 37? Yeah. You give them something to eat. Now, did Jesus expect them to have enough food on hand to feed all of these people when he says that? No. At least I don't think so. It would be kind of weird to think that he would. So what's the purpose in Jesus responding back to their request, which, like we said, is not being rude. It's not unreasonable. Hey, these folks are going to have to eat. Why would he come back to them with this answer of you give them something to eat? Okay, would have to do with faith at least somewhat, seems like. But what else? Okay, well, he knew what he could do. That's for sure. Any other reason? Okay, yeah, they've been with him up to this point. They've seen, you know, he could calm the wind and the storm. He could do all that. You know, why couldn't he take care of these folks? True. It seems like his response of you give them something to eat is trying to get the thought across to his disciples, you know, rather than just tell someone, hey, you know, go and get some, you know, you give of yourself. You provide for these folks rather than just, you know, tell them to go pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. So what are you doing to help them? He wasn't saying it would be wrong necessarily to send them away. At least he doesn't say that in so many words. But he's saying before you do that, well, have you given them anything? That's the idea. Before you delegate, before you push it off on someone else, well, you go and take, well, what have you done? So he says, well, you give them something to, if you recognize there's a need here, and there is, well, have you given them anything? And so, of course, their response there in verse 37 is what? Shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat? And it's interesting in their response, they're not necessarily saying no. It's not that they would be totally unwilling to do it. If Jesus told them to do it, I think they would. If they had the money all the time, that's an entirely different question. We know they didn't have much money with them at one time. But they're just saying, is this what you want us to do? That we go and we buy it? Because it would take a lot to feed all these folks. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It seems to be, when Jesus saw these folks, he had compassion on them, but yet when the time for them to eat comes, the apostles have compassion up to a point. They can see that these folks are getting hungry and they're going to need to eat, so they need to go and get food, but we're not going to do anything about it. You can see the need, but you don't have compassion to act upon it. Yeah, it's that idea. You would rather have them take the initiative. And so now that he's pointed that out to them, they say, well, I suppose we could. Shall we go and buy? You know, that's a lot of how, more or less they're saying, how could we?
He knew what he could do. We want to see
what the people could do. Right, right. So we get to verse 38, and he asks them how much they have. And how much did they have? 5 loaves and 2 fish. Yeah, 5 loaves of bread, 2 fish. I'm not even sure if that would feed the 12 apostles and Jesus, 13 men. But so that's what they have on them at the time. And it's not surprising, per se, when you think about the context of this, it's not surprising that they would have, you know, just that little bit with them, because remember, the apostles have just come back from the mission they were sent on where they were told to take nothing. So they wouldn't be, you know, they wouldn't be really, really packed up. So they tell him what they have, and Jesus doesn't say anything back. He doesn't say, oh, that's not going to be, you know, we don't see any report from Jesus asking about, you know, it's not enough or it's too much. He doesn't comment on that at all. After they tell him how much they have, there in verse 39, it says, then he commanded them all to sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups, by hundreds and by fifties, which again kind of shows you the size of the crowd, because it's going to get to that down in verse 44 and tells, you know, some of the number of it, but it also tells you the size of this place they're in and why the disciples would say, hey, this is a desert place. You know, they need to go to a village. If this place is big enough for people to sit down in groups of 50s and hundreds and stuff, you know, you're a long ways away. This is a big open field, open area. You know, there's enough room for all these people to sit down here. So we get to verse 41, and Jesus looks up to heaven, said a blessing, broke the loaves, gave them to the disciples to set before the people, and he divided the two fish among them all. And they all ate and were satisfied. And what's always struck me as funny is in verse 43. So what does verse 43 say of Mark chapter 6?
They took up 12 baskets of fish.
Yeah, 12 baskets full of broken pieces of bread and fish. Yeah.
More than enough.
So there was more than enough, because they all ate and were satisfied. It's not like, well, I'm going to take this, but I don't want to take... No, everybody had their fill. But I've always wondered about this just in terms of how did it happen? You know, how did this multiplication of the loaves and fish, you know, what did it look like? And we don't know. It's not revealed to us. It's not important. I also kind of wonder about, they took up 12 baskets full. Well, who, you know, did this crowd of people coming to see Jesus just bring empty baskets with them? I'm not sure where the baskets came from. But, or maybe that's just to give an indication of how much was left, you know, as a term of measurement. We're not really sure, but either way, these five loaves, they had people witnessing, this is how much we had to start with. It wasn't just, oh, they secretly had more. No, this is it. Five loaves, two fish, but from that, he's able to feed all of these people, feed them, and, you know, they had, you know, a bit of bread here, a little bit of fish, all the crumbs, the leftovers, all that, up to fill 12 baskets. And, of course, the crowd says, were how many? 5,000 men. Doesn't say that only men came. So, at least 5,000. Most likely more than that.
If he could feed that many people with what he had, mm-hmm. We can't feed anybody with what we have. And the others, I mean, we have so much that we have people that need food.
Oh, right, yeah. No, and that's a good point. It's the idea of having compassion on people. And, you know, well, these people are here. Well, you give them something. What have you done? Yeah, it's, you know, take that initiative. If, you know, Christ could do all this, you know, understanding, of course, the miraculous nature of it, we can't do what he did, but still, don't we have more than enough to go around? And yet, how much are we doing? How much are we giving?
So, spoil.
Yeah.
Here in the
we sure do. Yeah. Thank
you.
Yep. And that question there, how can we accomplish most with the little we have? It goes to that thought, but in the broader context, the spiritual sense of it, is the lesson here, they thought there's no way. We have to send the people away. All we have is this. But they didn't factor in. They had that and Jesus. So we look at us and our lives, and, you know, let's ignore the food part of it for a second. But we think, well, what can I do? You know, I'm not the smartest person. I'm not the strongest. I don't have a whole lot to work with. I don't have a whole lot to give. Well, what does it say over in Philippians? With Christ, I can do all things. I can do all things through him. So it's the idea, you might not have a whole lot to work with. That's true. But if you have that plus faith in God, you never know what you can accomplish. So, yeah, we can accomplish a lot with the little we have. And if we're honest with ourselves, we don't have just a little. You know, you never know what you can do until you try. You know, a lot of us probably are, you know, smarter than we think or stronger than we're a lot more capable than we give ourselves credit for sometimes. But we want to use that as an excuse. It's an easy out. Well, I can't do it. Because we don't want to say, I don't want to do it, because then we feel bad. And we should feel bad if we see a need, if we see something good that could be done and we just want to get out of it. So we want to convince ourselves, well, we can't. I don't have the resources. I just don't have enough to take care of it. Well, you might not have enough, but you never know until you try. Again, you give them something to you. What have you done to try to help the problem? Or are you just waiting on someone else to go and fix it for you? That's the idea. We can accomplish much, even if we have just a little. All right, anything else on this account and feeding the 5,000? Mike?
For me, I believe we are removed from the reality of severe hunger.
We are.
Of famine, of what it's like to really be hungry. You know, we see the countries where people have starvation, and we watch the movie about reporting of it, and how, you know, these kids are emaciated and have vultures hovering over them because they're ready to die because they're starving to death. Their, you know, death is imminent. And when we have the slightest twinge of being hungry, we run right to the refrigerator or the pantry. And but to be really, really hungry, you know, you come home and you go, oh yeah, I got to eat right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what would it be like to day after day have so little to eat? And we just are not faced with that at all.
No. No, definitely not.
Have you ever fasted? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And then because of that, the spiritual part, they saw that.
Yeah, well, and that's clear from this passage. He gets to the shore, he had compassion on them. Now, when it first mentions that, it says because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he had compassion on the fact that they needed to be taught, that they needed the truth. So he had compassion on them in that sense, but, you know, what you're saying, if all he cared about was them hearing the gospel, well, then when the disciples say, we need to send away, he'd say, yes, send them away. He wouldn't care. But no, he continued to have compassion on their physical needs and on their hunger as well. So one interesting thing before we move on to the next section in this is that this miracle that we see taking place here, the multiplication of the loaves and fish to feed all these people, to feed the 5,000, is going to come up again later, because we see people have heard about it. And then later on, we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but later on, are going to be expecting something. But these people, this crowd, did they come to this place expecting to be fed? No. No. And we need to understand that. They went to such great lengths, running on foot, taking the long way around to get there ahead of Jesus. And like I said, maybe they were wanting to be there to see a demon cast out, because boy, that would be a sight to see. Or they wanted to see someone lame, you know, walking again. So maybe they did have some motive of getting something for themselves. But they weren't expecting to be physically taken care of. And yet, that's what happened. Because Jesus had compassion on them, because he wanted to care for these people. So he did it even though that's not what they were after. And this is somewhat speculation, but we might argue if they came expecting that, Jesus probably wouldn't have done it, because he would have known their hearts and know that that's all you're here for. And again, that's what we're going to see coming up again later. Anything else through verse 44?
To do with that question 13, mm-hmm. I just believe that we have to watch and learn to recognize our opportunities. We pray for opportunities, but then sometimes we don't see them.
Staring us in the face.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep, that's a good point. Yeah, we have to watch for opportunities. You know, all the things Jesus has taught his disciples up to this point, hadn't he taught them to do good unto others? Hadn't they heard all of these lessons so far? Yeah. Well, here's an opportunity, and it's not until Jesus says, well, you give them something, they still haven't, you know, thought to take the initiative in doing themselves. They have to be told. And even then, they kind of balk at it. Well, shall we go and buy bread for all these people? That wasn't what Jesus was telling them to do, but it's that idea. Well, what have you done? How are you trying to take care of them rather than just expect them to do it themselves? So as we're looking at this section here, the next section in our accounts in Matthew chapter 14, and then here in Mark chapter 6. After they've all been fed, they've ate, what do we see in verse 45? Okay. He made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd.
Why
have them go before him? Well, it seems like from verse 46, because he wanted to be completely alone. Because what we see is in verse 46, after he had taken leave of them, he went up on the mountain to pray.
Well, I think Jesus knew human nature. And once he had fed them, they became his meal ticket.
Yeah. Yeah, there would be that too. Yep.
And I think it's really easy to get people to become dependent.
It is.
I don't know that God expects me to feed Joe and his family time after time after time after time. He just sits and suns himself all day. God's the Spirit. May the worship Him, must worship Him in spirit and in truth. Makes me think that this is a spiritual thing. And Jesus, though He knew how they felt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at least some of them did. Yeah, they didn't come expecting it, but what we're going to see later on is people hear about it and they want to get some of that for themselves. That's true.
Where's the next meal?
Yeah. Now, the other interesting thing about it is, you know, as you're pointing out, is the timing of it. Jesus does this for them. He has compassion on them. He's going to take care of them because they're here. But when does he feed them? After he spoke to him, yeah. It's not, you know, hey, you can come and have a meal, and then while I've got you here, I'll talk. No, he taught them first. It was only after teaching them and seeing that it was getting late and they, you know, didn't have, you know, anywhere else to go that they were needing to eat. A lot of times, you know, we talk about how we don't know hunger in this country. We just go to the refrigerator. Sometimes we'll sit down and eat before we're really even truly hungry. But Jesus didn't, you know, well, let's, we're not doing anything else, let's sit down and have, you know, he had them fed because the disciples say, these people are going to need to eat. They've been here for hours now. So he only did it when there was a need and after doing the teaching. And then once he fed them, we see he dismissed the crowd. He said, okay, you know, I'm leaving. You guys need to go back to your homes, go back to, you know, it supposed to indicate to them that it's done, but as we see, it becomes a problem later on because people will come to expect that kind of thing. But, go ahead.
Can I ask another question?
Sure.
saying we were there.
Okay.
And I was there. And we listened to Jesus. And the mom took over and said, "Where's the hamburger?" And you won't have any, and I won't have any. But Jesus said, "Sit them down, spread them out." And there was more left than there was to start with, which is kind of an indicator of Jesus' willingness to feed them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they crossed the lake that night because Jesus understood human nature.
Yeah.
And my human nature is, we found a new meal ticket. Sit on down and get breakfast. Well,
yeah.
There wasn't any breakfast. They didn't give up. They looked for him.
Oh no, yeah, they didn't give up. They wanted to find out where he was. And it just goes to show, you know, we know when Jesus was in his earth mission, he didn't stay in one place. He moved around from place to place so he could bring the message to more people. And so he was coming to them, and sometimes the people would come to him. I mean, that's what we see here. The crowd came to him, but he's not going to stay there and stay with them. He had other people he was going to see, and part of that would be he didn't want some people to think, well, we have him here, and he's going to feed us and take care of us and do all that. Well, no, he has more to do.
Because the food was so good, or the speaker was so good.
Yeah.
I'm afraid to say it was the food was so good.
For some of them, at the very least, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He knew the hearts of some of the people, and that the message he was giving back to them. So whether they showed up the next time in a smaller group, maybe, that believed, and the rest of them wanted to eat, some of them did get the message.
Yeah. Yeah, some did. Well, I mean, that's the way it always goes. You say something, someone's going to hear you and understand you. Someone's only going to hear part of it, and someone, it's just going to go in one ear, out the other. You know, that type of thing. The other thing here of why he would, you know, have the disciples get in the boat and go back is because they weren't intending to stay here for that long anyway. The whole reason they went was to try to get away from the crowds, to go to this desolate place and rest. Well, that didn't happen like they were hoping it would. They got over there. He ended up doing even more teaching, performing this miracle. But it's not like they were going to get in the boat and say, "We're going to spend, you know, the next couple weeks over there." No. Seems like he said, you know, come away and rest a while. And they go over there. They'd be there for, I don't know, the better part of a day, something like that. So it's no surprise he tells his disciples to get back in the boat and go back over, because they weren't intending to stay here anyway. So he has his disciples get over. But the thing we see here in verse 46 is, he, you know, he has them go while he, you know, dismisses the crowd, tells them to go back home, go find somewhere to rest, because it's late in the evening. He went up on the mountain to pray. So he's finally getting some of that alone time. He didn't get much alone time with him and his apostles, him and the disciples, but at least now he has a little bit of time just to himself. And he goes up by himself, up on the mountain to pray. And so we get to verse 47, and it says, when evening came. The wording of this is somewhat curious to me, because I don't know about you all, but when I think of evening, I'm thinking of, you know, 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 o'clock. You get any later than that, I don't call it evening anymore, I call it night. But here it says, when evening came, the boat was out on the sea, and he was alone on the land. And he saw that they were making headway painfully, for the wind was against them, at about the fourth watch of the night. So what's the fourth watch of the night?
Midnight.
That's later than midnight.
Yeah,
between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. So So unless a whole lot of time passed between, you know, 47 and 48, when we say, you know, evening came, you got to think it's late at night. And of course, it makes sense that it's late at night because the disciples had already said it's getting late and these people are going to need to eat dinner. And that's when he, you know, performed the miracle and fed the 5,000. After that, he had them get in the boat and he goes up on the mountain to pray. So this is a few, you know, hours later. So it's late in the night. It's middle of the night. Past that a little bit, actually, if we're saying 4 a.m. So fourth watch of the night, he comes to them walking on the sea, walking on the water. Did they see him? Yeah, they saw him, but they didn't recognize him. They thought it was a ghost. And can we blame them? You see this figure looking like he's walking on the water. Well, no one can walk on water. They hadn't seen that before. It's not anything Jesus had done up to this point. Not to mention, it says, you know, that the wind was against them. That it's maybe not a storm, but kind of rough seas. So you're kind of focused on the task at hand. So what they're seeing is just this figure. They don't have a clear vision of them. So they're terrified. They see this person, but they don't recognize Jesus. They don't know that it's him. But what does he do?
He tells him him.
Yeah. He says, no, don't worry. Yeah, in verse 50, take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid. So that's what he says. Now, we have something over in Matthew's account that's not in Mark's account. In Matthew's account, after Jesus says that it's him and tells them not to be afraid, who speaks up?
Peter.
It's always Peter. Peter's always the one to speak and act first and think later. He's very impulsive, very outspoken. So Peter answers, Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water. Now, part of the statement doesn't sound very good from Peter. Because to say, Lord, if it is you, well, do you want to cast doubt on what Jesus said? Do you want to say that he's a liar? So it really doesn't sound good, but I don't think he meant it that way. What is it more likely that Peter meant when he says, if it's you, command me to come out? Okay, yeah, so Peter, he's not trying to call Jesus a liar or anything like that. He still, you know, doubts what he's seeing and hearing. He's not sure, he doesn't know what to believe at this point. But he knows if it is Jesus, then he can believe it. So that's the idea. He knows Jesus has that power. So if it's you, command me to come to you on the water. And Jesus says, come. So what does Peter do? He gets out of the boat, starts going over there. Now, I can't help but wonder what that first step would have been like. You're climbing out of this boat, and of course we gotta understand the boat's moving the whole time. It's not like it would be very, you know, calm or peaceful. So he climbs out of the boat, starts walking on the water, and it doesn't say how many steps he took or how far he was from Jesus. It doesn't tell us how far Jesus was from them. We don't have frame of reference on that. But he gets a little ways, and then what happens? Yeah, he loses faith, says he saw the wind. And remember, strong wind. The wind was kind of rough seas that night. It's not a full-blown storm, not thunder and lightning and rain, but strong winds. He sees the wind, he was afraid, and that's when he started to sink. And of course, it's no surprise that when he starts to sink, what's his reaction? There in verse 30 of Matthew 14. Yeah, Lord help us, Lord save me. You know, you're out here walking, you're doing this thing that you can't even believe that you're doing, But then you start to sink, you're going to cry out for help. And of course, he's going to ask the Lord for help because he knows the Lord can help him. So it seems like from verse 31, he had almost made it to Jesus, or maybe Jesus, you know, kept going a little bit further. They weren't that far away because it says Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him. So Jesus was close enough that he could get to him in short order and pull him up. But what's Jesus' response? Not only does he save him, but he says what? Yeah, well, thou of little faith. Why did you doubt? And why did he doubt? He was scared. That's what fear does. Yeah. Could he not see the strong wind and big wave from up in the boat? Yeah, at that point he hadn't taken the first. So, you know, the reality of it, you know, he had been aware of. They're in the boat. The wind was against him. He understood that. We're not to think that the sea immediately calmed down when he stepped on it. It's just, you know, when you're in the thick of it like that. And then the bigger thing is he saw the wind. We understand, you know, he saw the wind, he saw the waves, all that. But making that statement that he saw the strong wind, what's the implication there? He started to doubt because he was focusing on that, right? As opposed to took his eyes off Jesus. Yeah. Now, you're seeing Jesus, unless you have, you know, complete tunnel vision, you're still going to see the wind and waves, but you have your eyes on the Lord. But when it says he saw the wind, the idea there is he starts looking around and taking his eyes off of Jesus, and that's when he grew afraid, and that's when he began to sink. So that's what Jesus is saying. Why did you doubt? Well, he doubted because he was afraid, and he was afraid because he took his eyes off of Jesus. So Jesus, using this as a teaching moment for Peter, you know, you had enough faith to come out of the boat. You know, some people would probably not even do that. After Jesus said, yeah, it's I, come on, they would still be afraid. He wasn't afraid to come out of the boat, but then once you're here, now you doubt. So why? Why would you doubt? If you have enough faith to get out, you should have, you know, trusted in me and kept coming to me. So he pulls him up, and then they got into the boat. And then once they got into the boat, then what happened? Then the wind ceased. Yeah, it didn't happen when Peter stepped out. But now that they've gotten back in the boat, now the wind ceased. So what's the reaction once they get back into the boat? They're amazed, yeah. They're astounded. Those in the boat, in Matthew's account, verse 33, those in the boat worshipped him, saying, truly you are the Son of God. So this is what we're seeing here. But there's one other thing mentioned over in Mark's account. In verse 52, and it's interesting that it brings it up here, because now we're dealing with the miracle of him walking on the water. But it mentions, as it's making the statement, that they're amazed at what he could do, and they're worshiping him. It says there, for they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened. So why bring that up here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. That's the idea there, that their hearts were hardened. It's just not, it's not sinking in. You know, they can see the power of Jesus. They can see that he can walk on the water, and they can see that he can make Peter walk on the water. They can see all that, but they still didn't understand the loaves. And, you know, this is what he can do. Yeah. All right. So anything else before we stop for this morning? All right, because we're out of time. Well, Lord willing, we'll pick up there next week, finishing this up, getting to where they get back across the sea and make it to the other shore. Thank you.